Thanks, don't you think? Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Did you ever see the show Let's Make a Deal? You're the Jeopardy crowd, right? Or the Vanna White Wheel of Fortune crowd? Well, anyway, Let's Make a Deal. You get up on the stage and you're doing all this dealing, and then they give you the choice, you know? Curtain number one, curtain number two, or curtain number three. And everybody in the home audience and the audience out of the where the stage and the whole thing is sitting there yelling out what choice they think the person should make. Of course, no one really knows what's behind the curtains. If you did, you'd probably make a different choice, right? If you happen to know what's going to be behind the curtain before it happened. If you knew behind this curtain was the pig, and behind this curtain was the Jeep Liberty, and behind this curtain was the bike, you would pick, probably, the Jeep Liberty. But the problem with the show is, it's all chance. It's all random. You have no idea what's behind the curtain. But you know what's different about life? Is you can know what's behind the curtain before you pick. And last week I told you that I'm going to share with you in this series, and I started last week, the single most important thing I could ever share with you. And that is that God has given you and I the power of choice. You want a good life? Make good choices. If you want a bad life, you make bad choices. Of course, the problem is that all of us say we want a good life, but we end up often making bad choices. That if we would have thought through the situation beforehand, we could have made a different choice, and instead of ending up with a pig, we could have ended up with a Jeep Liberty in life, which is far more important than a game show. The Bible tells us in Galatians, do not be misled. You cannot ignore God and get away with it. Whatever you sow, you will also reap. It's the law of sowing and reaping. The law of choice and consequences. There are consequences for the choices that we make. And I shared with you last week that there's all different types of choices people make. They make emotional choices, relationship choices, moral choices, financial choices, attitude choices, thought choices, health choices, hygiene choices, vocational choices. The list goes on and on and on. Sociologists tell us we make almost 2,500 different choices a day. And tonight what I want to talk with you about is your thought choices, your belief systems. Because believe it or not, they are the single most consequential choice in your life. What you choose to think about and what you choose to believe have an impact on every single other area of your life. Several years ago, I was sitting at home on a normal Sunday afternoon and I was watching a football game. The phone rang, as it does in my house on a fairly regular basis. And I answered the phone, and I couldn't quite make out the other person on the other end. And so I said, excuse me, who's this? And I could tell the person was crying. And they said, Mark, this is Pastor Darling, right? I said, yes, this is Mark. And she said, well, I'm calling you from Georgia. She said, you may not remember my husband and I and or our children, but we used to come to your church. And I've had a terrible situation and I need help. So I said, well, you know, I'm here. I got all the time you need. Why don't you just take a moment and calm yourself and I'll be able to hear you a little better and just share with me what happened. She said, Mark, she said, my 20-year-old son, ever since he was a kid, he's wanted to fly jets. And so we moved here to be closer to the base and to the Civil Air Patrol. He was the youngest member of the Civil Air Patrol to ever get his pilot's license. And so he was training and he had gotten into the military and he was really looking forward to flying jets. She said, well, about 4 weeks ago, he went in for a doctor's appointment. He's having a little problem and found out he's diabetic. Now, of course, you know, it's It's not life-threatening. It's something that's totally controllable, Mark. The only problem is that as a result of diabetes, he's not going to be able to fly fighter jets. He's been very, very, very down about it. And last night he came home and found a note. And in the note he said that, "Mom and Dad, I don't want to live anymore if I cannot do what I always wanted to do. My life isn't worth living." And so she was giving me the order of, in her mind, how things had happened. And then she broke down crying. She said, "Well, this morning," she said, "we just found the note this morning. Some of his commanders came to the door and told us that they'd found him on the airstrip. Evidently, he had gotten on his motorcycle, driven down the airstrip as fast as he could, pulled out a revolver and shot himself in the head because he didn't want to live anymore." That's one of the greatest tragedies I've ever had to deal with. There's been more than that, but that was certainly one of the greatest. What do you tell someone in that situation? I remember being at the funeral and there was a room full of young people. I've never spoken at a funeral where there was that many young people. And I had asked the parents, you know, before the funeral, it's very awkward because what do you say? You know, you want to try to use this situation as a way to offer some hope to young men and women who are there, and also as a warning that this does not solve your problem. Taking your life is not the way to deal with disappointment. So I asked the parents' permission about what I was going to share, and they said, "Yes, Mark, please do, and we want some good to come from our son's life." What I did not share at the funeral, I'm going to share now. It would not have been appropriate to share at the funeral. You see, the mother and father, they wanted to believe because it helped them with their grief, that there was some physiological reason that this young man had taken his life. There was no physiological reason that he'd taken his life. It was a mental reason that he took his life. Here's what happened. His whole world, you see, was built around wanting to be a pilot, and he'd been working towards it, working towards it, working towards it. Wanted to fly fighter jets. And all of a sudden, life threw him a curveball. Now, it's a heavy one. Certainly a disappointing one. But he decided to believe in his mind that if he could not do what he wanted to do, "I won't adapt. I won't be flexible. I won't find an alternative." He decided, "My life isn't worth living." And for weeks and hours of the day, he ruminated on that thought. He played it over and over and over and over and over in his mind, until he got to the point that he literally convinced himself, "My life isn't worth living." He worked up the courage to get on his Ninja, drive 100 miles an hour down the runway, and kill himself. It was not physiological. It was what he decided to believe. It's what he decided to think about. Thoughts have incredible consequences in our lives. The Bible says, "Be careful what you think. Your thoughts run your life." Proverbs says, "As a man or woman thinks within himself, so are they." Some years ago, I was invited to come down to Honduras and do a conference. And I had never gone and spoken through an interpreter before. But I always kind of felt it would be part of what God wanted me to do, to go to other countries and to share the good news of Christ. At first, I was excited about this new, wonderful opportunity. One afternoon, when I was after the service, I overheard someone in the hallway say, "Man, I'll tell you, are they ever going to have trouble translating for Mark? That guy talks a mile a minute. I don't think it's going to work." They didn't know I heard them say that. I don't think they meant anything malicious by it. Doesn't matter. I took that thought and ran with it. And I went home and I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it. And then I began to think, you know what, Lord? Maybe they're right. You know what, Lord? I don't want to fail. My gosh, Lord, I don't want to stand in front of a whole bunch of people and make a fool out of myself. No, sir, I'm not going. I'm not going to go. I'll probably fail. So I called my dear friend who invited me and I said, you know, Walter, I really appreciate the invitation, but, you know, I've been thinking about it, and what I told him was true. It just wasn't the whole truth. I said, you know, I have a conference in Maryland the week after I get back, and, you know, I've not been out of the country. I don't know how my body's going to react if I get sick, and I can't jeopardize that I might miss that conference, so you know what, I'm going to have to skip this year. He was understanding, was no problem, because, you know, he found out in plenty of notice, but, you know, I made a terrible mistake, and I regretted it instantly. And I remember telling the Lord, you know, Lord, I'd like the opportunity again. And this time I won't let fear and I won't let the naysaying of other people get in the way of what I believe you want to do with my life. Because you know what, Lord? With you, all things are possible. And you can even take a blabbermouth like me and slow him down enough so someone can translate effectively enough for me to be used in another country. But I doubted. And I fed my doubt, and I fed my fear, and I began picturing in my mind what I would look like making another fool out of myself, and I didn't like the picture. So I walked away from the chance. That's the power of negative thinking. That's the impact that thoughts can have on our life when we allow the negativity of others around us to influence our own thinking or our own self-criticism. Imagine for a moment that you're building a house. And every day you're working on this house. It's your dream house. And at night, from the hours of 6 to midnight, you change into a different person. Same person, different person. And you go out and you take a sledgehammer to the house you've been working on all day. You break holes in the wall. You knock down 2x4s. You do as much damage as you can. Then you wake up the next day and you start to try to build a house again. Now, it's a stupid illustration, but I wanted to illustrate a point. That is exactly what we do with our lives. If you want to find your own worst enemy, usually you don't have to look any farther than the mirror. You say, you and I say we want our lives to be better. We say, I want to do something more wonderful with my life. But generally speaking, multiple times a day, we are tearing our own self down in our own eyes. With, I can't do that. I don't like this. This is an impossible situation. I've been given a raw deal. I'm a victim. I don't have the advantages other people have. And it's, I can't, I won't, I couldn't. And it goes on and on and on and on. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not attractive enough. I'm not this enough. I can't do that enough. And we always have reasons. And they play over and over and over and over and over again in our minds. Now, the only person with the power to stop the tape player or the CD, whichever you prefer, rip out the tape and put a new one in is you. And the only one with the power to put a new tape on and say what you want to be said on that tape that plays is you. No one else can do that. By the way, a pill won't do that. Do you know what I read in the paper yesterday? Please don't take this wrong. But I want to give you a little information I read today that was stunning. In the most recent and the most thorough test of antidepressants and placebos, sugar pills, you know what they found? They found that the people who were depressed and took antidepressants and the people who took the sugar pills that were depressed did equally well. They did equally well. Now, both individuals received ongoing care, ongoing communication. And you know what often a counselor will do with you? A good counselor will reevaluate with you your belief systems. call it therapy. And they'll go over with you unresolved issues. They'll help uncover things that, hey, wait a minute, that's not really true. But you see, here's the interesting thing. Lies can impact you as though they were true if you decide to believe they're true. Imagine for a moment that you go to the doctor. You haven't been feeling very well lately. You think you got a mild case of the stomach flu. You've been feeling kind of tired, fatigued, weak. So you go to the doctor. And the doctor begins asking you questions, doing a little examination, and he comes back into the room about 20 minutes later. You've been sitting there, and he sits down with a solemn look on his face and says, I don't know what to tell you, but you've got a rare form of cancer, and it's very serious, and it's probably going to take your life. Now, imagine you went in there thinking you had the flu, and now you hear the C word. One of the scariest words in the world to hear. Your mind, of course, is going to race a million miles a minute. You may be at first in denial. You may be, no, you can't be right. Can't be. I just had the flu. I'm healthy. No, you've got a rare form of leukemia, or whatever he says. You go home, and that hour and that conversation has now radically changed your thought process. Your emotions are now engaged. You're feeling sick to your stomach. You're thinking about all the things in life that you're never going to experience. You're thinking about the loved ones you're going to leave. You're thinking about all the things you wished you'd done, but now you can't. And your mind is racing like a locomotive down train track. Over the next several days, you probably go through a time of reflection and thinking about what maybe I'm going to beat this. I'm going to beat this, but the doctor's words are ringing in your ear. 3 days later, you get a phone call from the doctor's office. He's on the phone. He says, "Mark," he says, "I've got to apologize. I made a terrible mistake. They gave me the wrong blood work, the wrong sample for someone else. You do just have the flu." What would happen with this new knowledge? What would happen all of a sudden when you found out, oh my gosh, I was lied to? That's what you do. Probably a little more than that. You know, there'd probably be tears of joy down your face. You'd probably slump to the floor. You'd probably call as many of your friends and relatives as you could. But for that brief time, you learned a valuable lesson that when you believe a lie or when you believe wrong information, it impacts you emotionally, psychologically, and physically. It has an impact on you. I have dealt with, over the last 16 years, so many individuals who this single area has been the greatest stumbling block of their lives. It's learning to get the right perspectives on life and learning to believe the right things about life. When I was a young man, I was sharing with you last week how I had tried to get a job as a machinist. And I couldn't find one. I was I was getting married and I couldn't find a machinist job. I was a very good machinist. And being a machinist in those days paid really good money. Still does, actually. You just have to know more than I knew then. And I could not find a job, and I could not find a job. So I had to adjust, and I had to take whatever God would give me, whatever I could get. Ended up being a cigarette butt picker-upper at the Ramada Inn, assistant to the maintenance man. Being a cigarette butt picker-upper was my job. And martini glasses out in the parking lot. And cleaning out air conditioning filters and other little odds and ends for $4.75 an hour. Finally, one day the boss told me, "Well, there's a new job available, Mark. I think you could do it. It's being a breakfast cook." Now, I don't like to cook. I told you this last week. I don't like to cook. And I'd never cooked. But it paid $6 an hour. So I said, "I'll take it. I can do this. I can do this." You know what I played over and over and over and over and over again in my mind? I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I had to be there at 5:30 in the morning. I am not a morning person. I wasn't then, I am now. My whole life's kind of flip-flopped. But in those days, I was not. I had to get up about 4 to get ready to ride my bike because my car wasn't working, so I had to ride a bike there. And every morning I would go over that. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can make sunny side up. I can do scrambled. I can do poached. I can broil the steak. I can do the toast. I can do the pancakes. I can do it all through Christ who strengthens me. And shortly after I started, the NCAA wrestling finals were at Hilton Coliseum. And one morning, 50 to 55 wrestlers, very hungry, walked in at the same time, sat down at the same time, wanted their food at pretty much the same time. I thought I was going to lose my mind. I really thought I was going to lose my mind. Every fiber of Mark wanted to walk off the job that day and say, you know what, up yours and blah, 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 and I can't believe I'm the only one back here doing this, and you guys expect this of me. That was all the waitresses, you know, coming back, where's my order? Where's my order? Ding, 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 ding. You know, and I've got like 50 eggs on the grill at one time, pancakes over here, toast over here, and I'm running all over the place. And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do all things. God, if you're here, I know you're here. You're in me. You help me now. I can do all things. I can't quit this job, Lord. As I'm walking back and forth with all these thoughts. You see, it's amazing how multitask we can be when it comes to doing a task, but our minds thinking all kinds of other things. Well, about 8 months later, I got married. I worked there for a little while, and then came fall, and some friends told Kathy and I of a better job. My wife was expecting our first child. She was at home, not working, partly because of the pregnancy, partly because of her back. And they said, look, we used to cook in the sorority, and they need some new cooks. You and Kathy could do this. And I'm thinking, do this. Let's see, we've got a $50,000 budget. I've never ordered food before. This is cooking all the meals, not eggs and toast. This is coming up with menus, and we've got to live there. But we got our rent free, our electricity free, our food free, our phone free, a washer and dryer, and they gave us $500 a month. And I said, you know what? I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. We can do this, Kathy. We can do this. What's there to it? We open up some recipe books. We just triple, quadruple, do whatever to the recipes. We can do this. Never done anything like it before. My wife's never done anything like it before. 50 people we have to serve. Twice every day. They had to make food available for their lunches, but they were on their own. But breakfast and dinner, or lunch and dinner, breakfast they did on their own. We had to figure all the menus for the whole year, and we had to be within the budget. And my wife's expecting our first child. Every single day we went over that verse together. The first week we were there was rush week. That means they rush a bunch of young ladies through, hundreds of them, because they run, the sorority is like a business, and they try to get you to join and all that. So they want all this fancy stuff. So we made watermelon baskets with fruit. And then I thought one day, I know what we'll do. We're going to make fresh banana muffins for them. Because girls really like muffins. Guys, a little secret about ladies. Don't call it cake. They won't eat it. But if you call it a muffin, they will eat it. Okay? So, you know, we got this big Hobart mixer. It's about this tall, this big around, and we're mixing this thing, you know. All the bananas, fresh bananas, all the ingredients. So I'm reading the little thing. Kathy's over doing something else, and I look, baking something. Okay, so I reach up and I grab this baking something, and I measure it out perfect, and I put it in, mix, and put it in all the little muffin holders and stick it in the oven. And I mean, that banana, it's just wafting out into the room, out into the dining area. And I'm thinking, man, they've never had cooks like us. This is unbelievable. And the girls, they'd already told us that. So I take the muffins out, and I start carefully taking them out, and I'm thinking, you know, good chef always tastes what he's going to serve. So I pick one up and I take a big bite of that thing, and I no more to get it in my mouth than I spitting it out everywhere. I said, Kathy, there's like, we made like 300 of them. I said, Kathy, what did you do to these? And she said, Mark, what do you mean? I said, taste this. It's awful. She tasted. She goes, Mark, When I had my back turned, remember that?
Yeah.
Well, did you use baking powder or baking soda? I said, what's the difference? Like I said, I really did not know how to cook. I took this job on faith. I said, this is survival, baby. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. She said, Mark, there's a big difference between baking soda and baking powder. I said, well, I guess a little lesson. Throw them all away. So we threw them all in the trash can. It's 15 minutes before they're going to start rushing people through. I get in the car. I rush down to Hy-Vee. That's kind of like Cub food. And I buy every single muffin that they have. And I bring them all back and we serve those muffins. See, we improvised. We didn't cry. We didn't fall down and fall apart. I was only 23. She had to solve the problem. And I just kept reminding myself, we can overcome this. We can overcome this. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. If I hadn't believed that, I would have never survived my early years as a husband. Shortly after that, that was a couple years, I took this job selling auto parts. Again, I was in survival mode. I knew nothing about an auto other than that's a spark plug, that's a muffler, battery, yes, tires, your oil filter, and oil. Yep, I know that stuff. And I drove over in a blizzard to apply for this job. And once again, I looked the guy in the eye and I said, I can do this. You know why? Because God said I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do this. I have to do this. I need this job. I want this job. Yes, sir. I believe I can learn. I can adapt. I can grow. I can do this job. So the guy gave me the job. Now, when it came to pistons, rings, valves, valve lifters, I didn't know all that stuff. I didn't exactly know where to find it on an engine. And I had to take phone calls, and I had to go out and make calls on the customer. Well, shortly after I took the job, and I start making calls on the customers, I find out that everybody hates this company. Wasn't so much me, although it was hard to tell the difference at first. I walked into a couple shops, and the guys, when I told them where I was from, they pointed at me and said, get the blankety blank out of here, and you tell that blankety blank, and the guy they were talking about was my boss who lived in another town, and he never had to deal with any of this, and you tell blankety blank Herbert that he can go to blank. You know what I... So I'm backing down. I'm going, hey, you know, I'm really sorry I bothered you. Just to please, all I'm asking is for a chance. I'm not Don, so please remember that. I'll see you next week. So after doing this a couple months, then I find out, one day I found the books. I didn't know about the books before. I found the books. And I found out that the store had barely been making it for years. The guy told me it was doing like $20,000 of business a month. It was doing 8 or 9. And my pay was connected to how much the store did. So I remember one day, I drove out to this park. And I sat in my car, and I'm crying. And I'm thinking, Lord, you know, you're messing with me. I got a family to take care of. I've been waiting. I've been out of work for months. And I finally get this job. And this guy's a liar. And this company's pathetic. And I can't quit. I can't quit. And I said, God, and I call on these customers, and nobody wants to even see me. And I'm telling you, it's tough when you get rejected almost every other call. I had my little New Testament, and I opened it up, dried my tears, and I came to a passage in the book of Luke. And it was this story that Jesus told his disciples, and he said to them, he said, guys, I want to tell you a story so that you always pray and never give up. Don't give up. There was this widow. She lived in this town. And these people were taking advantage of her and they were going to take her property. So she went to the judge and she said, Judge, give me justice. Well, the judge, he didn't like people and he didn't like God. So he said, get out of my court. Because this judge only cared for the rich in the land. But that little widow, Jesus tells his disciples, she kept going back. Week after week after week, she'd show up and say, Judge, help me. Judge, give me justice. Finally, the judge looked at her and said, Woman, today I'm giving you justice. You're driving me crazy. Now, get out of here and I'll give you what you want. Then the next line, struck me like never before in this kind of a situation. Jesus said to his disciples, if this widow got justice from an unrighteous judge, how much more will God give his little children justice swiftly who cry out to him night and day? And right then, I had what's called an epiphany, a moment in time that transforms you into a different thing, into a different way, into a different way of thinking. And you know what that was? It hit me. I've been calling on the wrong people. Of course, these people don't like Don. They don't like this company. But you know what? God likes me. And I'm God's kid. And I'm going to start giving an hour a day out at this park calling out to God for business. God, give me business. God, help them say yes when I go tell them about our new AC Delco battery promotion. Now, you think that sounds really tacky. I believe the Bible's literally true. And I changed my mind. I changed the way I thought. And instead of being despairing, all of a sudden I was full of hope. And every day I would go to the back of that park. It's called Brookside Park. To a little stone shelter. The store was doing $20,000 a month. Not because I was a great salesman. Because I'm not. Not because I knew all the answers about an engine. But because I chose new thought patterns and new belief system. And I called out to God. And God changed the game. Do you know something? I've been following Christ 27 years. And I'm still learning the same lessons. I still have to deal with struggles and fears just like any one of you. I still have to go and deal with my thoughts. But as I deal with my thoughts, and as I evaluate belief systems, as I step back and take a look at myself, I can then honestly evaluate, you know what, Mark? That thought pattern, those beliefs, right, those aren't true. Well, you're right. They're not. And these are the ones you need to believe. And if you start believing these, your life will change and there'll be more hope and more joy and more peace in your life. I'll tell you one more story. Many years ago, and I was newly married, and as always happens in every situation, the bubble burst, and you begin to realize there's things about each other I really don't like, and there's pet peeves, and there's disappointments. The person maybe doesn't live up to your great expectations. And this was happening in my relationship with Kathy. And I was already down the road. I'd leave sometimes in the morning. Classic situation. Leave, we'd had kind of a disagreement. I'm sitting in the car and all the way, I'm thinking, man, this is what I'm doing. I don't believe it. I may not. Sometimes I'd say it out loud. But often it was just in my mind. I don't believe this woman. God, I just don't believe this is happening. I am so, you know, this is so pathetic. And this happened, and then this happened, God. And I said, what is it going to take to get through to her? That kind of pattern went on for about 3 years. It was getting to the point that I found myself emotionally distanced from Kathy. And one day I was praying and I was talking to God about my life and about stuff. And God started talking back to me. He said, you know, Mark, he said, you remember the verse in Proverbs that says, slander separates intimate friends? I said, yeah, Lord, sure do. He said, well, you're the slanderer. And it's separating you from your wife. You see, Mark, you're not talking bad about someone else behind their back. You're talking bad about your wife to yourself in your mind. You've been doing it now for about 3 years. And you play the same record, Mark, over and over and over and over and over again. And you know what? You've started to believe it. And I remember tears welling up my eyes thinking, you know, Lord, you're right. When I married Kathy, I thought that I had married the most extraordinary woman in the world. By the way, I do believe that today, but only because of what I'm going to share with you. But now, 3 years into my marriage, all I saw were the flaws and the blemishes and the frailties and the disappointments, and I was just like frustrated. God told me, Mark, I want you to go open my word again, Mark. Let me talk to you. Let me help you out of this. And I came to Philippians. And it says, and now, dear brothers and sisters, let me say one more thing as I close this letter. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and good and right. Think about things that are pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting your mind on these things, and the God of peace will be with you. And once again, tears welled up in my eyes, and I admitted, God, I have been violating, disobeying, ignoring, disregarding that verse for 3 years in my relationship with Kathy. If someone were to ask me, Mark, write down on a piece of paper the 15 things that you think she needs to change in, I'd have it done in 30 seconds. You can do a test with yourself sometime, saying, let's see, what are the things I don't like about myself? Just start writing, and the pen starts to flow. And then I said, well, what are your strengths? What do you really like about yourself? What do you like about this person? And I remember sitting there thinking, because I took out a piece of paper, and I sat there for 5 minutes, 6 minutes, you see? What was this revealing? It was revealing that my mind was not used to those thought patterns, because I was having trouble getting them on paper. And I swore that day, this will change. Starting today, I am going to fix my mind on the good things, the reasons why I married this girl, what's so wonderful about her, what's so good about her. Because here's what starts to happen. When you get married, you start to see the flaws, and then you're in a church like this, you know what you start to do? You start to compare her to her. Well, geez, Lord, so-and-so's a, she's always smiley and vivacious and outgoing and affectionate, and I got her. She's quiet. She's not very passionate. She's this. That's what happens in your mind. Trust me. One way or another, in small ways or big ways, it will happen to every single one of you. It's the nature of man. And we have to absolutely work against it and follow God's ways, or your mind's going to go down that road. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's like water always goes to the lowest level. Your minds will always go to the lowest, grossest things by nature. But as it does that, you see, as I sowed those kind of thoughts, the consequences in my marriage was I was starting to be distant from Kathy, and I was starting to wonder. I didn't do anything about this. I'm just wondering sometimes in my mind, what it had been like if I was married to somebody else? That's a bad thing. You don't want to sow those kinds of seeds, because that's the fruit that grows up. And I made a willful decision that day. I said, no more. I'm going to attack this thing. There are wonderful qualities in this girl's life. I have been disobeying God, and I have been undermining my own marriage. And I took out a piece of paper and I began to write down the qualities that I loved about her. And I began to tell her one or two of them every day. And when I'd find my mind, maybe we'd still have disagreements. We still do. I didn't let my mind. When I'd get in that car on the way to work, I'd just go, God, take these pathetic thoughts right now. She's still a wonderful girl. She has flesh just like I do. She can make mistakes just like I can. Thank you for her. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. And you know what? Today I believe that. I believe that. Kathy's the best thing that ever happened to me. She's God's gift to me. I want to give you a little assignment this week, all right? I want you to try to evaluate yourself this week, self-analyze yourself. I want you to ask yourself, what are the kinds of things I think most often about yourself, about life, about the future, about the past? And then I want you to evaluate, are they really true? Are the things that you ought to be thinking? You know the secret to feeling good emotionally? It's thinking better thoughts. Most of you will find, if you evaluate your emotions, they're connected with how you've been thinking, not vice versa. We tend to think, oh, I just woke up feeling kind of moody today. Well, sometimes we wake up not feeling the greatest, but often, if we'd stop dead on our tracks and evaluate our thoughts, you find out I've been sowing some really crappy thoughts lately. And I'm not feeling too happy. Next week, we're going to talk some more about choices that we make in our lives. We'll get into what I believe are probably two of the most important choices you could ever make with your life. Let's pray. Father, we thank you tonight that you're in the business of changing lives. In fact, your word says that we can be transformed by the renewing of our minds. Even the song that was sung tonight, Lord, if we want to be someone else, then we've got to change our mind. We've got to change the ways in which we think. We've got to change the way we perceive the past and view the future. We've got to change our belief systems. Your word is the final authority on how we should think. And your word gives us hope. Your word gives us life, peace, and encouragement. I ask you, God, to help us, all of us, as we're in this daily struggle together. Help us to change our minds. In Jesus' name, amen.